My name is Justin. I am part of the Hoboken Grace speaking team, and I'm so glad to be with you here today. Chris is taking a week of rest before the Christmas season swings in full swing. So I'm really glad to be up here with you today to launch our Christmas series. And our Christmas series, we're just really excited about it. And I love that all of you are celebrating. I see people are wearing their sweaters, wearing their Christmas gear. I'm so glad you're able to do that with us today. Christmas is really kind of can be an odd time of year, because for some of us, it's a great celebration. We love the decorations. We love the celebrations. We love the food. We love the opportunity to wear our Christmas sweaters. I have a cousin, and she has been just enjoying Christmas with abandon. She has been posting pictures of her favorite Christmas sweaters day after day after day. And then she and her coworker comment about what's so great about this particular Christmas sweater. Oh, I love in particular the fact that the reindeer are wearing Christmas socks. You know what I mean? Just like, they're just really, really enjoying the Christmas season. And it's great to see them celebrate with such abandon. But on the other hand, for some of us, Christmas is not like that. Christmas is a time of stress. And Cindy talked a little bit about that too for herself, where she woke up this morning and just realized, hey, Christmas is here. And she felt this pressure. She felt all of a sudden, hey, I've got to be places. I've got to get stuff done. I'm running out of time. When my wife Nancy and I traveled to Wisconsin to go see our family for Christmas, we experienced that in spades. There's about 9 families that we need to see in the span of time that we're there for Christmas. And so we're driving from place to place. We're making sure that we get to see everybody. That means that we can only spend a short period of time with one family before we have to jump in the car and drive away somewhere else. And so it gets to be really, really stressful, the Christmas time of year. And then for some of us, Christmas is even darker. For some of us, Christmas is a really dark time. It's a time where we're just drawn to mind people that we're missing, people who are not present this holiday season. And maybe it's because of a conversation you had or a broken relationship. I have another cousin who really, really struggles during the Christmas season because she desperately misses her mom. She died young, and she wishes she could celebrate Christmas with her mom, but she can't. And so Christmas is an incredibly dark time for her. And so we have this juxtaposition of people who are really super excited and celebrating Christmas, and we have other people for whom it is just an incredibly dark time. And so we think to ourselves, hey, I should be happier. It's a Christmas happy time. And we really struggle with this tension between all around me, everybody is celebrating with lights and decorations and food, and inside I feel dark. I feel hurt. It's a terrible tension. And it's sort of interesting because if we think about the Christmas story, that tension was present then too. So if I take you back to the Christmas story, 'twas the night before Christmas and all through the house. Okay, not that Christmas story. It's the Christmas story that you probably have heard a million times on that Charlie Brown special, right where Linus gets up and he says, "Lights, please." At that time, the Roman Emperor Augustus decreed that a census should be taken throughout the Roman Empire. This was the first census taken while Quirinius was governor of Syria. Yeah, that's the story. This is the story that Luke tells us. And the cool thing about what Luke is doing for us is he is putting it in an incredibly precise detail. He's telling us exactly when this happened. He wants his readers to know the precise information. He took a study. He knew Matthew. He knew James, the brother of Jesus. He knew these people. He hung around with Paul, and he wrote this letter out so that people would know exactly what happened during the time that Jesus was on earth. And so he gives us this context, this very detailed context. It was while Augustus was emperor. It was while Quirinius was governor of Syria. And it was during the first census, not the second census, the first census, a very precise time, and that his readers would know exactly what he's talking about. So the fun thing about this story is it's not a once upon a time story. It's not in a land far, far away story. And Mary and Joseph were not on vacation. All returned to their own ancestral towns to register for the census. And because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee. He took with him Mary, his fiancée, who was now obviously pregnant. They took this journey not because there was a celebration, not because they were going on vacation. They were doing this because the emperor wanted to make sure he was collecting all the taxes. That's why. He wanted this incredibly opulently wealthy person wanted to make sure he was collecting all of his taxes. And he did not care one bit. He did not care one bit what Joseph had to leave behind. He didn't care that they had to walk 80 miles through rugged country to get to Bethlehem. He didn't care that Mary was pregnant and that she could have lost the baby on that journey. We would hardly get in a car and drive 80 miles with a pregnant woman. Here they are walking through, trudging through 80 miles of territory. They could have been set upon by bandits, but the emperor doesn't care. He doesn't care. It was a time of oppression. It was a time of slavery. It was a dark time. Matthew is another person who tells us the story of Jesus' birth. And he too wants to be incredibly precise, but he's going to draw his reader's mind to another event that occurred at that same time. Now, you've all heard the story of how when Jesus was born, three wise men came looking for him. And it's interesting that they call them wise men. You know that? Did you hear that story recently? It was actually made the national news that men are idiots. Yes, men are idiots, and that's why they are more likely to engage in high-risk activities like jumping out of airplanes and riding around on motorcycles. And, you know, they're also more likely to drive around a strange town wearing strange clothes and not asking for directions. But these guys weren't idiots. They were wise men. They stopped and asked for directions. And here's what they asked. Where is the one who was born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. This is the question that they're asking. They've stopped to ask for directions. And as they've stopped and asked for directions, it got to the point where even King Herod had heard about these men who came looking for the King of the Jews. And here's how Herod responded. King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this, as was everyone in Jerusalem. He called a meeting of the leading priests and teachers of religious law and asked, "Where's the Messiah supposed to be born?" "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they said. Now, King Herod, he was a tyrant. He was a petty tyrant, but he was a tyrant. And he was crushing the people with tax levies. He was building an opulent castle for himself and fountains and statues so that he could say, "Hey, you know what? I'm king of Jerusalem and it's a good thing. Yeah, Jerusalem's up and coming." He wanted to sort of puff himself up in the Roman Empire. And so he was pulling every tax dollar he could out of the people of Jerusalem. But not only with that, but he was a killer. History tells us that at one point, Herod was concerned. He wanted to be called Herod the Great. He was concerned that his own family was plotting against him, and so he had them killed. He was a tyrant. He was a murderer. This was an incredibly dark time. And one of the things that I notice about this passage is that the people that Jesus was coming to, they sold them out. They sold them out. They knew the passage. They knew what they were talking about because they looked it up and they said, "Hey, yeah, the King of the Jews, he's supposed to be born in Bethlehem, in Judea." They sold them out to Herod the tyrant. And what did Herod do? Well, the wise men found out, "Hey, don't go back to Herod." And when Herod discovered that, this is what he said. Herod was furious when he realized that the wise men had outwitted him. He sent soldiers to kill all the boys in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old and under, based upon the wise men's report of the star's first appearance. This is not a story that takes place in the context of happiness and light. This man killed children because he was afraid his position would be supplanted. might cause you to remember another tyrant who killed children. And Pharaoh in Egypt, he too killed children so that he could maintain his position. It's interesting how this echoes, and history repeats itself as Herod kills these children in Bethlehem. It's an incredibly dark moment. And it's in this moment of oppression, this moment of hopelessness, this moment of death, that Jesus is born. And because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee, and he took with him Mary, his fiancée, who was now obviously pregnant. And while they were there, the time came for her baby to be born. She gave birth to her first child, a son, and she wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no lodging available for them. And that night, there were shepherds staying in the fields nearby, guarding their flocks of sheep. And suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared among them, and the radiance of God's glory surrounded them, and they were terrified. But the angel reassured them. "Don't be afraid," he said. "I bring you good news that will bring great joy to all people. The Savior, yes, the Messiah, the Lord, has been born today in Bethlehem, the city of David, and you will recognize him by this sign. You will find a baby wrapped snugly in strips of cloth, lying in a manger." Hope has arrived. The hope of the world has arrived. But nobody knows. Nobody knows it. There are two people in the temple. They hear. They know. They recognize it. And then the shepherds, they were told. They recognize it. And the wise men. And that's it. That's all who recognize that the hope of the world, the hope that they have been waiting for centuries, has finally arrived. The prophecy has been fulfilled. And why didn't they go? They knew the prophecy. They knew the passage. Why didn't they go with them? Why didn't they go, "Hey, yeah, Bethlehem, it's just south of Jerusalem. We'll show you the way. Oh, let's go with you. We'll find out what's going on." No. They don't. They act like nothing important has happened. Well, why is that? Well, I think one of the things is true is that they had given up hope. The world was a dark place. They were living under this incredible oppression. The Roman government was oppressing them. King Herod was oppressing them. He was a tyrant. No one was safe. It was an incredibly dark time. And they gave up. They gave up hoping. And you know what? I don't think they're the only ones. I think for some of us, we've given up hope too. We've given up believing that God can bring hope into our marriage. We've given up believing that God can bring hope into our loneliness. We've given up believing that God can bring hope to helping me end the addiction, to ending the pain. Maybe it's because we're superstitious that we still come to church, but we've given up believing that God is going to show up in our darkness, that God is going to show up in our pain. We've given up. We feel hopeless. I remember a time when I had given up. I was in a tremendous amount of pain, and I could find no escape from the cruelty and the violence. There was no comfort in the drugs and alcohol and sex, and I was in incredible pain. I was alone, and I thought there was no escape. And one night, as I was laying on the floor, I thought I saw a solution to end my suffering. I looked over at the window and I thought, I can crawl over to the window. I can open it. I can climb up on the roof and I can end my suffering. I couldn't get the window open. I can't describe for you the level of despair you feel when you see a possibility to end the suffering, to end the pain, and you can't open the window. And as I lay there sobbing on the floor, I screamed at God. I told him I was in hell and that I was suffering and that I wanted it to end. And if I couldn't get the window open, could he just please end the pain? Could he just kill me now and put an end to it? I know what it's like to be hopeless, to feel like there's no solution, there's no way out. But one thing that we learn from the message of Christmas is that hope emerges from the darkness. I think one of the reasons why they missed it is because it showed up in a way in which they didn't expect. The Jewish leaders were expecting a conquering hero. They were expecting swords and battles and the clash of arms and the throwing off of the Roman oppression. But that's not how God came. That's not how hope emerged from the darkness. It was through a baby. It was through a person. And that's how God works. He works through humans. And we don't like that. We want God to come like with an angel, a big chorus of angels, and lights and flashing and terror and beauty at the same time, and singing and flying without flapping. We want a superhero to come swooping in with all flash and dash and lift us out of danger and set us on the top of the building in safety. That's what we want. But instead, God shows up like a baby, as a human, unexpected. It's like that commercial, right? They talk about you can plan for everything, but you can't plan for the most unexpected of all, humans. And then the branch falls down on the car and the other car swishes the car away, right? And the other truck crushes the car. Humans, they're unexpected. Humans. This is how God chose to work. We don't want him to work through humans. Humans are frustrating. They're part of the reason why, oh, I want to go home, and the tourists, they're right there in the sidewalk, and they stop, and now I can't get down. I'm going to miss my train. Just get out of the way. I want to go home. So frustrating. Humans. It's because of humans that we're in that dark place. Something that was said, some wound, some damage, some hurt. That's why Christmas is dark, because of humans. But this is how God chooses to work. He chooses to work through people, through humans, through a person. You know, this isn't the first time. In fact, all throughout, we find God works through humans. Let me tell you another account. Let me tell you about Ruth. Now, this is my, you know, long, long ago, far place, far, far away story. But it's actually happened. This is a story from Israel. So Elimelech was married to Naomi, and he had two sons. And there was a famine in Bethlehem, in Jerusalem. And so Elimelech took his wife Naomi and his two sons, and they went to Moab because they thought they could find food there, get away from the famine. And while they were there, the two boys get married. One boy gets married to Ruth, and one boy gets married to Orpah. That's Orpah, not Oprah. My friend Anthony likes to tell the story. When he was telling this account to some high school kids, one of the kids got up in the back of the class like, "And you get a husband, and you get a husband, and you get a husband." But it's not Oprah, it's Orpah. You'll never forget now. So they're in Moab. And then disaster strikes. Wait, there's a famine. And then disaster strikes. Yes, Elimelech dies. And not only does Elimelech die, but the two boys die too. And poor Naomi is there in Moab, and she feels destitute. She's separated from her ancient family. She is alone, without her husband, without her sons. And she feels a terrible grief. This is what she says to her daughters-in-law. "Things are far more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord himself has raised his fist against me." She'd given up hope. She'd given up on God. She said to them, "Leave me. I'm going to go back to Bethlehem and die. Leave me." But from that incredibly dark place, hope begins to emerge. But not in the place that we expect. Not with angels, but through a person. Through Ruth. And Ruth says to Naomi, "No, wherever you go, I go. Whoever your people, my people. Whatever your God, my God. I'm going with you." And so Ruth and Naomi return to Bethlehem. And so I won't read the whole story, but in that story, Naomi is restored. Her faith in God is restored, and she is restored to her family because of Ruth, because of a person. In fact, in the book, it tells us this is how what happened. Ruth had a baby, and it says, "Naomi took the baby and cuddled him to her breast, and she cared for him as if he were her own. And the neighbor women said, 'Now at last Naomi has a son again,' and they named him Obed. And he became the father of Jesse and the grandfather of David." Some of you have already connected the dots. This is the King David of Bethlehem that is the reason why Mary and Joseph had to travel from Nazareth to Bethlehem. This is the David. This is the baby that begins to show how hope will emerge from darkness. God wants hope to emerge from the darkness. And he does it through people. He does it through humans. And we don't want that. We want the miracle. We want this flash and dash. We don't want that because humans are hard. They're frustrating. But over and over again, God uses people. God uses humans to bring hope to the darkness. And so I think that there are three things that we really need to pay attention to, or we'll miss it. Just because it's not what we expect. So we need to pay attention so we don't miss it. The first thing is to really relax that God uses people. To really submit our will to say, "Okay, God, you're going to use people. Not angels, not superheroes, but people." We need to accept that. The second thing is that means that we need to be open to people. We need to communicate and be open. There's a couple ways in which this plays out. I think one of the ways in which it plays out in our lives is that we need to be ready to say to somebody, "I'm experiencing darkness right now. I'm experiencing hopelessness right now. Life is hard right now. And I know when you're in the midst of this darkness, in the midst of this difficulty, it's one of the hardest things to do is to say it hurts, to say it's dark and I need a light. And some of you have already reached out and said that, and I applaud you for doing it because I know that it's hard. But in those moments, when you say to somebody in your dinner group or somebody on your team, somebody that you know here at church, and you say, life is dark, you give God an opportunity to let hope emerge. You give God an opportunity for him to bring light to that darkness. Right now, our dinner groups are on break, so it's so easy to hide. It's so easy to just disguise the darkness, disguise the suffering. And some of you are in dinner groups and nobody knows the suffering that you're going through. You're so good at hiding it. But if God works through people, if God wants to work through this incredible family that is right here assembled alongside of you, then we need to let them know, hey, I need some light. I need some truth. And you may feel that there's no hope. But God has brought this family together to bring hope. And the third thing is that we need to be ready to be light in people's darkness. We need to be ready to initiate, to go out there and to see what's going on. And be ready to spend some time with somebody, to break away from the hustle and the bustle and our schedules, and to make space and time for people. To make time to bring hope and light to people who are hurting. I was reading about holiday depression and holiday difficulties, and so I did what everybody did. I went to a source I trusted. I went to the internet. Yeah, I Googled it. You know, because they can't put anything on the internet that isn't true, right? Actually, do you know why they say that? Do you know why? It's actually because the internet is all comprised of computers and wires, and computers can't lie. So that's why it has to be true, right? But you know what the internet said? This is what it said. It said, you know what? If you are experiencing pain right now, send yourself a card. Really? If you are hurting, send yourself a card. Send yourself a little gift. But wouldn't it be amazing if the people around us who are hurting, if they were to get a card from us, from their family, right here? And not one of those flippant cards that shows, here's a picture of what's going on in my life, or not just one of those texts, mass texts, Happy Christmas, you send out and we go, who is this? But if we pay attention to the pain that's going on around us, and say something. Bring a little light. Some of you are thinking to yourselves, I know exactly who he's talking about. Some of you are saying to yourself, I know exactly who it is that needs that light. I want you to do something about it. So I'm going to ask you to do something about it. Everybody take out your phones. Come on. Take out your phone. Who do you know needs to hear from you? Send them a text. Say, hey, let's get together for coffee. Make yourself a note on your calendar to call them. Let's be a family that brings hope into darkness. Okay, so let's do it. Maybe send them a note right now. Tell them, hey, let's get together for coffee on Wednesday. It's awesome to see you guys doing this. You guys are awesome. You know that, right? Don't put your phone away. Maybe as I was talking, he said, I know who he's talking about. It's me. I need that hope. I need that light. If that's you, I want you to reach out to somebody and say, hey, can we get together? Can we talk? If you go to the online program, hobokengrace.info, and scroll down, there's a place there for prayer requests. You can go there. Tell us what's your struggle. Tell us what's the darkness so that we can pray for you, so that we can reach out to you. Because we care about you. And we want you to know, in the midst of darkness, hope emerges. In the midst of darkness, hope emerges. And let's be the family that steps into each other's lives the way that Christ stepped into our life. In the midst of incredible darkness, in the midst of incredible pain, he steps in and lets hope emerge. Will you pray with me? Father, first, I just want to say thank you for Charlie. He's the man who saw me in my pain, in my grief, and reached down to help lift me up. And I'm thankful for him and what he did for me in introducing me to you. And it's my hope, Father, that these friends, that this family, that those who are struggling and are suffering through darkness, that they will experience hope. That they will experience the hope that you bring us through each other. And I also pray for those who are bringing hope. Help us to be diligent, to follow up with the people that we thought of, that we texted, that we remember, to communicate with them, that we're with them, that we love them and we support them. Father, bring hope to the darkness. We're grateful for you. We're grateful for Jesus Christ. And we'll talk to you again soon.